Sup, you beautiful bastards. You're watching the Philip DeFranco Show. It's a fantastic Monday. Hopefully, you did not burn your eyeballs today. But if you did, a fantastic day to learn that the show is also available in audio on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But hopefully that didn't happen and you're having a great day. And we're going to have a lot of news to talk about today. So just buckle up, hit that like button, and let's just jump into it.
Starting with...
Y'all, I gotta be honest. I love me a solar eclipse. Not only because it shows us on a cosmic level that size doesn't matter, it's what you do with it, but also, too, I get to nerd out on all the ways that it impacts us in ways you may not realize. Starting with the most basic thing, that a lot of people experienced a different eclipse today. Which, by the way, North America is not gonna have another total solar eclipse again until 2044, with this one specifically stretching from the Pacific coast of Mexico across 15 U.S. states all the way to the coast of Newfoundland, in Canada, turning day into night for at least 30 million people and probably tens of millions more. And I say probably tens of millions more because this thing had hype, like Taylor Swift Eras Tour levels of hype. With eclipse chasers booking flights, hotels, and tickets to viewing parties, flooding towns and cities with hundreds of thousands of weekend visitors. And in fact, so much so, the Perryman Group projected that this would bring a $6 billion boost to the U.S. economy, which, and I'm not kidding here, is about as much as Taylor Swift's Eras Tour generated. You know, we saw people celebrating all this in countless different ways. I'm hanging out with Bill Nye at Eclipso-Rama 2024 in Texas. And this is others boarded two Delta flights to track the path of totality. In fact, NASA also following the path in two specialized jets flying at 50,000 feet to collect data on the sun's corona. You know, scientists more generally had a lot of weird shit to look out for today. Like, for example, the eclipse gave a rare opportunity to test Einstein's theory of general relativity, or because the darkening sun allowed astronomers to observe the shift in the position of background stars caused by the sun's gravity warping space-time. Also, you had biologists anticipating a change in wildlife behavior, or because with the sky suddenly going dark, they expected, not sure if it's a scientific term, but the dumber animals to think that it was nighttime and start releasing hormones relating to sleep. Plus, with a sudden drop in temperature as well as pressure, it could have led them to anticipate an approaching storm and become anxious or fearful. But the most interesting animal behavior is that of humans. With people coming together to feel the entire spectrum of human emotions in a communal celebration. Some getting married, others giving birth, many down in beers, maybe all three. But with that one group of people that was missing from the spectacle were New York's prison inmates. Or because last month, the state's Department of Corrections announced that due to safety concerns, all state prisons would be locked down during the eclipse. And so we saw in a protest six men at Woodbourne Correctional Facility suing the department, arguing there that it is their First Amendment religious right to witness the celestial event. And with that, pointing out that the Bible describes an eclipse-like event during Jesus' crucifixion, with Islamic scripture also describing something similar after the death of the Prophet Muhammad's son. Though also, apparently just about anyone could find significance in Monday's eclipse. Or because the plaintiffs included a Baptist, a Muslim, a Seventh-day Adventist, two practitioners of Santeria, pantheistic, Afro-Cuban folk religion, and one atheist. And that last one explaining in a court document, eclipses are important because they inspire awe and deep reflection, and are a rare opportunity for everyone to come together, enjoy our common humanity, and share joy at being alive. And apparently, that argument actually worked. Because in a settlement just a few days ago, the state let those six men go outside to view the eclipse. Though notably, it doesn't appear that other inmates got the same privilege. Which is yet another example that the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Is that the phrase? What is the phrase? It gets the grease. As my grandma used to say, same difference. But as amazing as all this was, it's important to remember that for some people, Eclipse Day is going to be the worst day of their life. With that, professional nerd Hank Green even explaining why in a video.
It is not really the amount of light that comes from the sun that's dangerous, it's the quality of that light. It is extraordinarily high energy light. So even if it's just the tiniest sliver of sun still visible as the moon goes over it, if you look at that for as little as a few seconds, you might permanently damage your eyes.
But Hank also adding that a second danger is that you're going to have so many people driving on the roads, which will inevitably just cause more traffic accidents.
We actually saw this in the numbers leading up to the 2017 eclipse. Fatalities in car crashes went from the background rate of around 7.9 deaths per hour to over 10 deaths per hour.
The warning that this year's eclipse was even more dangerous because it was so accessible to so many more people. But for now, we're gonna have to wait to see what those numbers are, kind of like how we have to wait till July 5th to see how many people accidentally blew their fingers off because of fireworks. But in the meantime, I gotta ask, how was your eclipse day? For me, it was whatever. I kind of ended up just getting lost in thought about Heroes, like the TV show Heroes, because there's a meaningful eclipse in that show. And then I just got sad because the writer's strike on that one, while very important, it ruined what I think was going to be one of the best shows on TV. So maybe it was always doomed. I don't know. Main point, happy Eclipse Day.
And then
we got a lot of quickie entertainment news, starting with celebrity legal drama. Like, for example, country music star Morgan Wallen just got arrested for throwing a chair from a rooftop bar in Nashville, with Metro Nashville Police releasing a statement on Twitter saying Morgan was booked for three counts of felony reckless endangerment and one count of misdemeanor disorderly conduct, with a chair landing on Broadway close to two Metro Nashville police officers. And USA Today obtaining an affidavit where officers claim that he threw the chair for, quote, no legitimate purpose. Which for me just begs the question of, what would a legitimate purpose be to throw
each hair off of a roof.
Like, that's just a weird sentence. Like, would he be fighting the fucking Green Goblin? But the good news is reportedly there were no injuries. As far as Morgan, he was released by 3:30 a.m. after posting bond. Also, regarding celebrities having legal trouble, we should talk about Jonathan Majors. He just got sentenced, and the big thing is that he avoided jail time because he was facing potentially up to a year in jail after being convicted of assault. But this judge instead ruled on probation, ordering him to pay a $250 fine and undergo a 52-week counseling program. With outlets like Variety noting that programming is specifically about domestic violence and that it'll start off in person in LA with future sessions possibly being virtual. And then on top of all that, he'll also have to complete his mental health therapy that he's been in and provide updates on that. But if he doesn't end up complying with his sentencing and probation, he could end up facing jail time. Then, in not legal news, but other quick celebrity news, you had Billie Eilish announcing her new album and then there being fallout after that. With the writing on Instagram today that the album Hit Me Hard and Soft will be coming out in May. That she won't be releasing any singles leading up to it because she just wants to hit people with the whole thing all at once. Obviously, you had Billie and her fans excited, celebrating the news. But then, something appears to have happened that pissed Billie off, and that's because she posted Instagram stories saying, fuck you, to Rolling Stone. With accounts like PopBase saying that she wrote and then deleted this after the outlet allegedly leaked her track list. But currently, the outlet's article on the upcoming album doesn't have the track list, so it looks like it may have been removed. But it is worth noting that they aren't the only ones that appear to have shared it. The pop culture news account still having the track list posted. Places like Genius Lyrics have it as well, but Billie's fans are primarily going after Rolling Stone, just pissed off at them, slamming them on every corner of the internet. Though for their parts, neither Billie nor Rolling Stone have said anything more about the debacle.
And then,
we've had a lot of planes and ships in the news doing things they're not supposed to do, but unfortunately, today is no different. With most recently, passengers on this Southwest flight that took off from Denver yesterday getting this show. Right, and what you're looking at here is the engine cowling, which is a removable sheet of metal that's normally supposed to cover one of the plane's engines. Except here, when someone looked out their window, they saw it sheared off, striking one of the wing flaps and just kind of whipping in the wind like that for 25 minutes. With the flight then immediately returning to Denver, and thankfully nothing else went wrong. Of course, with this, one of the first questions was, what plane was it? And like with what's been the case recently, it was Boeing. With this particular model being a 737-800, which was built in 2017. But to be clear, at this point, like, we don't know that Boeing is actually to blame here. But it could have just been the result of faulty maintenance, not a design issue. A Southwest spokesperson saying the incident was a result of a mechanical issue. But either way, you got people seeing Boeing and engine ripping apart in headlines, and they're going, oh, just more of the same recent troubles. Which, I mean, not even including the two big crashes that happened years ago. It just seems like there's been bad news after bad news since January. Right back when the Alaska Airlines 737-9 MAX blew out its door plug mid-flight, which of course led to a DOJ criminal probe and a $1 billion lawsuit. But then of course, at the same time, we've had horrible boat news. Because of course, 2 weeks ago, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed after a container ship lost power and rammed into it. That killing 6 people, and only 3 of those bodies have been recovered so far. Cleanup crews also working, removing 1 Statue of Liberty's worth of debris from the river so far. Though notably, the ship's still stuck there. And we're also now finding out that there was almost a repeat of that disaster on Friday night. Because reportedly, another large container ship nearly struck another bridge. With an 89,000 ton vessel losing propulsion, though not all power, in the Kilvan Cull waterway near New York Harbor, which is a busy shipping lane between Staten Island and New Jersey. There, thankfully, there was a group of tugboats that guided it to a stop near the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, where it was repaired, with it eventually regaining power and safely anchoring outside the waterway. But with this, I'll say while it was reminiscent of what happened in Baltimore, unlike in that incident, this one had the U.S. Coast Guard managing vessel traffic service, which means that they're actually prepared for emergencies like this, which is maybe why nothing happened. But this is reportedly only 12 ports of vessel traffic service, and obviously Baltimore Harbors wasn't one of them.
And then,
today is a good news, bad news situation for Elon Musk and Twitter. And I'll start with the good news, right? His recruitment effort to get Mr. Beast in to try to use him as a way to go like, hey, this is a place to post videos. It appears to be working out, at least to some degree. But Mr. Beast posted an update over the weekend saying posting videos on X has been awesome so far. And with that, including a screenshot of view metrics in the first video that he uploaded having the most views with 177 million. And more importantly, also adding, so far it's been around $1 million in ad revenue. I'm just adding it to my video budget so now I can spend more on content, lol. And so a number of people are seeing this as a win, at least for Mr. Beast. Because of course, on the other side, there's long been speculation that one, Twitter inflates video view counts, and two, people and outlets have previously accused the company and Musk of using back-end tricks to specifically make Mr. Beast videos bigger. And during all this, we've seen no shortage of creators going, I'm not getting anywhere near that Mr. Beast money. And that including some of the biggest creators on the platform. And notably, all this is Twitter's kind of just been needing a win lately. Especially as one, there have been reports of users decreasing, and now two, and this is actually one of the biggest stories of the day, it's feud with Brazil. With the Supreme Court judge in the country now investigating Elon Musk for obstruction and for refusing to comply with orders to block fake news. And to give you some background here, that judge has been trying to combat online disinformation and hate speech, citing its threat to democracy. And recently, the court actually ordered X to block certain accounts in the country. And while we don't know exactly what accounts this was applied to, it was likely ones that have been accused of spreading fake news. Now, at first, Twitter complied because it was facing hefty daily fines if it kept those accounts up. But then we saw Musk quickly reverse course, unblocking the accounts and condemning the judge for putting the company in this position, writing, "We are lifting all restrictions. This judge has applied massive fines, threatened to arrest our employees, and cut off access to X in Brazil. As a result, result, we will probably lose all revenue in Brazil and have to shut down our office there. But principles matter more than profit. And saying this judge has brazenly and repeatedly betrayed the Constitution and people of Brazil. He should resign or be impeached. And Musk also vowing to publish all the demands from the court and reasons why those demands violate Brazilian law. And so now with that, you have the court shooting back at Musk, with the Associated Press reporting that the judge is now including Musk in an ongoing investigation over the spread of fake news and also opened a separate obstruction investigation into Musk as well. With that judge writing, the flagrant conduct of obstruction of Brazilian justice, incitement of crime, the public threat of disobedience of court orders, and future lack of cooperation from the platform are facts that disrespect the sovereignty of Brazil. And with that, many outlets have noted that the fake news problem has been a priority in the country since last year, right when Bolsonaro supporters stormed government buildings in an event that paralleled January 6th. And so also with this, the investigation has gotten some support, with Brazil's attorney general tweeting, "It is urgent to regulate social networks. We cannot live in a society in which billionaires domiciled abroad have control of social networks and put themselves in a position to violate the rule of law, failing to comply with court orders and threatening our authorities." So notably, not everyone supports this. Right, the judge opening these investigations has been criticized in the past by people who think that he's overstepped when it comes to free speech. And we've seen some conservative politicians in the country praising Musk for going against the judge. But as far as what's going to happen here, we're going to have to wait to see. And this is an important one for several reasons, but also because Brazil is actually a major market for X. And then, you know, if I had to choose one word to describe the weather of 2024 so far, it would be wet. Between what's felt like the endless rain in California and the south to all the snowstorms spread out everywhere else. Wet is the word. And for all you errand runners, hikers, and vacationers out there, you don't want to let the weather control what you do. And luckily, the fantastic partner of our show, Vessi, they have you covered. And they have you covered in style. Be it my weekenders or my new Vessi Stormburst low tops, which are easy to slip in and out of, I'm still good to do just about anything all day in the same shoe I was wearing out in the elements. I'm taking my beautiful wife out to dinner. And reliable is another word that comes to mind when I think of Vessi. Right, they're ideal for any occasion that might find you around water, coastal walks, exploring outside the city, forests, camping, snowy days, boating. I'm just listing a lot of activities. Heading down on damp mornings. Boom, another one. Washing your car. Why won't Phil stop? Because there's no limit. So what are you waiting for? Just go to Vessi.com/DeFranco to get 15% off your first order. And also, I'd say check out Vessi's super sleek Astoria backpack. It's 100% waterproof. But main thing, that's Vessi.com/DeFranco. And then, Israel is pulling back from southern Gaza, right? That's the news that's all over the headlines. But that news may not mean what you think it does. Instead, they're doing it in preparation for what many fear is a massive attack on Rafah, right? The last major city in Gaza, the area on the border with Egypt, and it's where the Israelis told everyone to evacuate to if they didn't want to be in the middle of the Gaza City and Khan Yunis invasions. Which is why right now, Rafah is completely filled to the brim with people with literally nowhere to go. Right? It currently has over 1.4 million Gazans. That's over half the territory's population. And this is, it's not like they can just head back to their former homes in Khan Yunis. With the emphasis on the word former, as Israel has leveled much of it, with one resident even describing it as all just rubble, saying animals can't live here, so how is a human supposed to? And the expected attack on Rafah comes as months of negotiations over a ceasefire have continued to break down. And this, as this won't be shocking to you, both sides have blamed the other for a breakdown in negotiations. So this is, there's a lot of pressure on Israel to get one in place, right, as the time for the hostages being held is quickly running out as more and more turn up dead. Right? And so that, coupled with the mounting death toll and really bad PR from this war, it's led to officials within Israel calling for new elections this year. Right? And it's not just coming from outside the government either. But even War Minister Benny Gantz is pressuring Bibi to hold elections. And Bibi withholding elections, right, that's not a shock, because he's very unpopular right now, and 50% of Israelis apparently think that he's doing things for mostly political motivations now. And then, of course, comes the international pressure. You know, Israel's partners are increasingly growing tired of the war and how Israel's conducting it, with it often seeming they have little regard for anyone on the ground, with that including aid workers, including those working with Jose Andres in the World Central Kitchen, the IDF calling those killings a massive error. But this, as critics have pointed out, that incidents like that, they happen so regularly that it's hard to believe that it was an error. And with that, we saw Andres criticize Israel for its actions, saying, "This doesn't seem a war against terror. This doesn't seem anymore a war about defending Israel. This really, at this point, seems it's a war against humanity itself." And this is, Doctors Without Borders have described Israel's actions as a slow motion massacre of people to subject them to the kind of deprivation of food and water that they've been subjected to for the last 6 months. Right? So many killed, so many displaced, so much destruction. And it's because of all this, we're seeing longtime allies like the U.S. trying to get a ceasefire going and more aid to Gaza. Although notably, as the U.S. is still willing to sell them weapons, much to the annoyance of an increasing number of Americans and lawmakers. But this is, other partners are seriously discussing canceling arms shipments, like with the UK. And then there are also countries who are trying legal routes to hamper Israel's war efforts, such as this morning when Nicaragua sued Germany at the International Criminal Court, claiming there that it was supporting an Israeli genocide in Gaza. And that lawsuit also asking the court to force Germany to reverse its decision to suspend the funding of UNRWA, as the group's long been accused by Israel of being a hotbed for Hamas members, with recent allegations indicating that some of of its members may have been involved in the October 7th attack. And that leading to a whole group of countries such as the US and Germany pulling their funding and support of the group. Although notably since then, the Israeli claims have come under considerable scrutiny. And also, a big thing with the situation is with no matter what happens next, there's a good chance that shit will still be popping off. Because either Israel invades Rafah and we see whatever the hell that looks like, or it agrees to some kind of ceasefire. But even if that happens, there's a real threat of a regional war. Right? Israel and Hezbollah continually bomb each other, and Israel's conducted major airstrikes in neighboring Syria. And with Syria, I mean, that's a whole clusterfuck amid its civil war. But the most recent high-profile airstrike was in Damascus, where the Assad government still rules. And that alone could be enough to spark a response from the military. But then making matters even worse is that the airstrikes killed two top Iranian generals and reportedly targeted their consulate. And Iran's involvement in Syria, that's its own set of problems. But Israel feels like it's being used as a springboard to attack Israel with proxies. Except after this airstrike, Iran's just threatening Israel itself and saying, none of the embassies of the Israeli regime are safe anymore. So any sort of situation where there ends up being less fighting, it seems less and less likely these days. And then, in huge international news, we gotta talk about Ecuador and Mexico. Because Ecuadorian police have raided the Mexican embassy in its capital city of Quito. Right? And this is a very big deal. Right? Because under the 1961 Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, diplomatic premises are considered inviolable, with host country officials and law enforcement only being allowed to enter with the permission of the ambassador. And unlike a lot of international law, this is a rule that most countries, even the most well-known rule breakers, tend to follow. With there really being only a handful of cases of government-supported embassy attacks that actually happened, or the 1979 takeover of the American embassy in Iran being the most well-known. Though ironically enough, there's also another famous case of a raid on an Ecuadorian embassy in Cuba in 1981. Though notably, Israel has also just come under fire for its attacks against Iran's diplomatic premises in Syria, which have been criticized by UN officials and called by many a violation of international law as well. But jumping back to Ecuador, a key thing to note here is that they weren't targeting the embassy staff. Instead, they were actually arresting Jorge Glass, Ecuador's former vice president who's been convicted of bribery and corruption, and who also notably was seeking asylum in Mexico on the claim that he was being politically persecuted. But with that said, a number of diplomats reportedly suffered injuries during the raid. And on top of that, the raid came at a time when tensions were already high between the two countries, with Ecuador declaring the Mexican ambassador persona non grata just last week after Mexican President AMLO criticized the country's elections. And ultimately with this, international law experts and leaders across the region widely agree that the raid violated the Vienna Convention, with AMLO saying on Twitter that it was a flagrant violation of international law and sovereignty of Mexico, with that also declaring the suspension of diplomatic relations with the government of Ecuador. And this is Ecuador's neighbors, including both a right-wing Argentinian government and a left-wing Colombian government, criticizing the raid. And actually, Nicaragua has joined Mexico in severing diplomatic ties with Ecuador. And Mexico now moving forward with a case against Ecuador at the International Court of Justice, which notably is the same court where cases have been brought against Israel and now Germany regarding their role in the situation in Gaza. And while the United States hasn't issued the strongest condemnation of the raid, it has acknowledged it, with State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller simply saying, the United States condemns any violation of the Vienna Convention, calling on the two countries to resolve their differences. And notably, with all this, again, ironically, Ecuador has historically been among those who have fiercely criticized this type of raid, as they're well known as being the country who sheltered WikiLeaks leader Julian Assange in their London embassy for 7 years. And back in 2012, when the British government threatened a raid, they said they were deeply shocked by the British government's threats against the sovereignty of the Ecuadorian embassy, and saying that it would be a clear breach of international law and the protocols set out in the Vienna Convention. So of course, with that is that there's a different government in Ecuador today than then, which is why there's really no way to know what happens from here, but we're gonna have our eyes on it. And then finally, today we have commentary. We dive into the comments from the last show and see what y'all had to say and if I have anything to add to it at all. Sometimes I even disagree. The horror! Though I definitely didn't disagree with a lot of the commentary that was happening around these so-called nuisance streamers, or as I call them, the assholes of all ages who have found out how to monetize being assholes by live streaming being assholes. With Jonathan Collins writing about one of the 14-year-olds at the center of the story saying, anyone who thinks, oh, he doesn't know any better, he's just a kid, how the fuck do you expect them to ever learn if you don't teach them what they're doing is stupid? And Lockhack saying it would have been in his best interest if he was arrested. And Local Menish jumping on that thread saying, and also, kids aren't all stupid. They're very capable of learning when they have to. Infantilizing them and defending bad behavior because he doesn't know any better is exactly why these kids are comfortable behaving in a way they know isn't right. They know they can get away with it. And again, most of their behavior is mimicked behavior. They see teenagers or fucking grown-ass adults doing this and getting successful, getting money. And I would add then to that point, then you get platforms that get to go after the little person that's mimicking the bad behavior and they scapegoat them, because God forbid there actually be consequences for one of the cash cows. And I'll also add to that by saying it's not up to the platforms to also raise these children. There needs to genuinely be a question of where the hell are the parents? And even there, I'll say this, because you know, everyone feels comfortable just throwing someone under the bus if it's like an easy answer. Kids at times, they're gonna do shit. And oftentimes that's regardless of the initial parenting. But if it becomes consistent behavior, you see it repeated over and over again, that is when you say, what the fuck's up with the parents? And some like Viola were saying just that, saying this is not just about
about social media. A well-taught kid will not do such disrespectful things. Parents are not raising them right.
Also, I'll say there's a lot of conversation around actually owning your games or not. It was I mentioned, it is a lot of the conversation and the comments mentioned. Of course, it goes beyond just games. It's pretty much all entertainment that's gone digital now. But with that, Botanga's saying, I've heard many other people say this about what's going on with video game ownership, saying, quote, if buying isn't owning, then pirating isn't stealing. And while I would never personally endorse pirating, that was a very popular comment. And actually, we had the man at the center of that story jumping into our comments and saying, thanks for the mention, I'm the Stop Killing Games guy in the video. With the exposure this is getting, at the very least, I think we're going to get answers one way or the other and clear up all the ambiguity on whether companies can destroy people's games or not. Best case scenario, people will be entitled to keep games they pay money for. What a thought. And then all those replies, you're just glazing the man. We love you, Ross. Thank you, Dr. Freeman. Keep fighting the good fight. And there were no comments about me in those replies. My ego could barely take it. How dare someone get compliments other than me? But then the last comment I want to touch on involved the Botswana elephants story, right, where Botswana threatened Germany with 20,000 elephants. And if that sentence just sounds insane, like you're like, what are you even talking about? You need to watch the last show. But with that story, it's B-Ray wrote, big fan from Botswana here. Hello to probably one of 23 people in Botswana that watch the show. It's also important to note that human lives aside, elephant overpopulation poses a threat to the local ecosystem as a whole. Their destructive nature and grazing habits results in habitat loss for so many smaller species of animals, as well as posing a threat to certain species of flora as well. It's insultingly arrogant for people sitting in offices in the US, Germany, the UK, etc. to insinuate that their knowledge of elephant conservation, ecotourism, and hunting regulations in Botswana trumps that of on-the-ground educated local experts who dedicate their lives to working directly with these animals. Botswana has successfully tripled the elephant population over the last 30, 40 years without the help of the Humane Society of the US. I think the handling of the elephant-related issue should be left to those who actually have them. And while there was a lot of support, we also saw the likes of Paige Conley writing, if Botswana knows what it's doing, that it can control the elephant population without the barbaric, cruel, and evil practice of trophy hunting. If the EU wants to ban imports of elephant heads and tusks in its own borders, it can. Botswana needs to worry about its own problems and laws, not the EU's. Though also, it's B-Ray responded, and if you want to read the whole thing, you can pause right now. With one, we don't sit here pretending to love and support trophy hunting. Majority of Botswana are vehemently against it, saying the temporary lift to the trophy hunting ban wasn't done with joy. It was done with knowledge that culling in this instance is the only ethical way of controlling a population that has gotten too big for its natural environment to support. And two, it's Germany and the UK that need to worry about their own borders, problems, and laws, saying they don't speak for all 27 EU countries. They both practice culling of certain animal species for causing far less death, destruction, and havoc than elephants do. And they're the ones who came out making condescending statements against us and the methods we've had to take, as if both countries have an eradicated majority of their indigenous flora and fauna in favor of mass polluting concrete jungles. And personally, whether it be that story or anything else, I know people have a lot of thoughts and feelings, but that kind of back and forth is also why I love this show. And I also love this last segment. And actually, on that note, that's where today's show is going to end. Thank you for being a part of another daily dive into the news. And as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, that's bae, need you every day. You light my oxygen.